Hello and welcome to the June 4th edition of Jeff W. Radio. Jeff Green is away for the day and is unable to host this podcast. So I'm doing it in his place. And I'm joined by, in the following order,
Ryan Scott,
Robert Ashley,
Sean Elliott,
Sean Malloy.
And today's show is going to be short, not only because Jeff's not with us, but because we just got done taping another segment on Dawn of War 2 that's going up on Friday. So rather than look at it as just getting a single short show on Thursday, think of it as a two-part show where you get to hear it Thursday and Friday.
Assemble it later on your own. It's like a project.
And with that, I want to jump right into a thank you to a listener. We have this thing where we like to receive candy from parts of the world outside the United States.
Though.
And yeah, or in this case, within the United States, as long as it's Puerto Rico. So we get a letter that says, "Dear GFW, thanks to Mr. Bush, I have $600 to spend on candy, and I live in Puerto Rico, which isn't even a state of the union. Still, he gave me cash. Here's some candy from Puerto Rico." He didn't leave his name. He left his Xbox gamertag. I don't know if he wants me to read that, so I'll just say in without the whole thing, we'll call him Seal. So thanks so much. The candy was awesome. I'll talk about that real quick in a minute. But then he also adds, "P.S. I got some Puerto Rican rum with Ryan's name on it. He'll be talking like Al Pacino in no time." "Sorry for not buying GFW magazine. We don't get the magazine here, but I love the podcast." So yeah, thanks for the candy. Puerto Rican candy was different. It's a lot more natural than like the gummies and the sour stuff from elsewhere. It's just like there's never more than two ingredients, and one ingredient is always sugar. So it's like these coconut bars are really good. It's coconut and sugar
glued together with sugar. Yeah,
yeah. There's like sweet potato balls, sweet potato and sugar.
Mm-hmm. Wait. What was the sweet potato aspect? Was it like a sweet potato like cooked like a mash kind of thing? Or
they were just like these like balls. They actually looked like little turds almost.
Well, that's appetizing.
Natural.
Kind of very appetizing. The
purplish turds.
Yeah.
Those were good. I really like, and then some sesame, you know, some sesame seed glued together with some sugar, and that was good.
Yeah,
the one that got a little funky was there were these, how do you describe it? It was like a construction paper cone cups. In the way that you'd make like yourself a paper drinking cup origami in school for the hell of it, mm-hmm. put water in it, you can get like all in one drink before the bottom falls out. So imagine one of those, and that's your candy wrapper, and it was just corn and sugar in it. But when you eat it, it tasted like sawdust or something. It's like eating cat litter, and that the moment it drops in your mouth, it's like you'd rip 600 bongs or something. Like you have no saliva or anything. And
Wait, what was the consistency? What was, it was like a
like
powder?
I said, imagine, it was powder. So imagine like concrete mix, cat litter, sawdust, any kind of thing like that that will soak up, that will quickly soak up.
It's like eating like corn? Raw Metamucil.
Dude, the analogies keep coming, man. Like any, the word, and it was bad. And then I tried to give it to people around. And no offense, man, if Seal, this is your favorite candy in Puerto Rico, no offense. I'm guessing you probably just get like Snickers and stuff, though, and you got this for
novelty.
Yeah, for the novelty.
We can get Snickers here.
But if you like it, no offense.
He's probably sitting there going, dude, you were supposed to put it in water. Read the fucking
instructions. The thing about candy is you can like it or you can't. I mean, it's up to you.
Yeah, and that's personal
choice. Gave me one of those, and you're like, try this. This is good.
That's when you know not to.
I tried to give it to everyone in the office, and every time I'd go up to someone, they would like be like, no thanks. And I'd be like, why?
I know
like,
maybe
because you have a fucking reputation, man. No one's going to buy your shit.
Shit-eating grin on my face when I did it.
When was the last time you went around the office giving away good candy? You're like, dude, try this really good candy that I'm totally not going to eat myself.
I ate it in front of people, in front of Scott Sharkey, and I got him to try like half a little bit. But even most people just wouldn't even do it. Anthony tried some, and I was like, dude, your tongue's not going to turn black, your mouth's not going to burn, like whatever. It's not. You're not going to get diarrhea. Just do it. They wouldn't do it.
It's just the presentation. Like if
you should have brought one here, I would have tried it. I would have tried it on the show.
If you had invited people to come into your office and just had an array of candies, I bet people would have tried it. But if you walk up specifically with one candy, like, hey,
I tried some unwrapped candy. Yeah.
Like the more sincere you are with something like random, the more I know that you're not really sincere.
So long story short,
it's a trick.
Thanks for the candy and keep sending it to us. And so we got a lot to talk about, as Jeff would say.
Obvious.
I want to start talking about the games we played, and Robert, I know you played Trials 2.
Yeah.
As have I. Just came out on Steam. $8. Trials 2, and it's a fitting name. It's as fitting a name as any. It's the most, like, accurately named game, probably.
Probably.
This sounds like, just created. By the title, I would guess it is just, like, a pure game.
Oh, yeah. It's a motorcycle sort of stunt platforming game, sort of all physics-based.
Imagine pitching this as you describe it.
Yeah, it's 2D, basically, although you can go into
first person. But it's 3D graphics to further complicate things.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's sort of you've got a sort of a trial bike, a motorcycle, and they set up all these different courses of ramps and all kinds of obstacles and stuff, and the game wants you to use this pretty, you know, serious physics to get across these obstacles. I downloaded, before it was on Steam, I downloaded the trial version because I remember reading it.
Trial.
Yeah, exactly. Because Rock, Paper, Shotgun had a mega hard-on for it, and I tried the thing a while back, and I liked it, but I didn't download it. And then so it came on Steam, and I obsessively got into the game.
This is what happens.
Nearly entirely because I'm such a glutton for punishment in games. Like, Ryan's thing for like collecting stuff. Like, you know, you had to get your achievements. Like, I'm like that when it comes to like punishing. You know, like your achievements in Team Fortress. And
I'm
like that, except I'm compulsive about completing something that is retardedly difficult, and the game encourages it because it can sort of let you reset at any point in these racetracks. There are these little like checkpoints that once you cross them, you can reset back there and try the same jump over and over and over again. And
you succeed in the smallest increments possible and feel okay about it too, right?
Yeah.
So say if a single course, like, and say this again, the whole thing is viewed from the side. It's 3D engine, but you're only able to move. You can. This is called front loading and back loading, I believe, in motorcycle terms. I'm probably wrong. I know loading is involved in it, but you basically lean forward or adjust your weight to the back of the bike. Those are options. And when you're in the air, of course, that will control, like, if your bike's going to tumble forward or backwards, and then acceleration and braking. And you basically just go from the left of the screen eventually to the right, but across a number of, like, just grueling challenges where you might have to jump something, and there's no way you're going to just basically hit a ramp and land on something else. What's going to happen is that you'll get your front wheel. If you're angled enough back, your front wheel will hit the top of the next landing platform, and your back wheel will kind of be down on the side, and you'll have to use the momentum of that to haul itself up over the ledge onto the next thing. Later on, there's like insane loop-de-loops, and when you come out of them, you need to be crouched down so that as you pass through. So say you do a loop and you pass through the exit tunnel, your head's going to get taken off if you don't duck down.
Yeah.
And so you think it, you're like, okay, that was cool. And then like something always goes wrong. But
although that level that you're talking about was probably my favorite level in the game that I played. I think you're talking about Where's the Ground? I think it's one of the medium levels.
Yeah.
And I actually played that one like 5 times because it got to the point where I could actually just get all the way through it without ever
stopping.
Yeah, and it was really fun. Like,
that is
it had some really cool jumps and stuff. But
part of like the hard time I had with the game when I first started, aside from the fact that the tutorial is like, to use the shitty pun, like the difficulty ramps up. The tutorial like absolutely does not understand the purpose of a tutorial to ease someone into something in a challenge that's going to become increasingly, you know, difficult. And it throws you at stuff. And I was ready to uninstall after giving up on like one of the later tutorial parts.
Yeah.
But later on, though, when you hit it, I'm like, okay, I get this. Here's a bike and here's this crazy corkscrew thing. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what's the Flash game that's now coming to consoles where you're on a
sled?
Line Rider.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe it's just about fluidly finding some path through here. But then it does have this, you know, in the tutorial thing, you can watch a demonstration run, and when you do it, it will not only show the bike navigating it, but it will have the keys illuminate on the screen and let you know exactly when they're leaning forward, by how much, when they're like hitting the brakes, when they're going back. And you watch it, and it was just this really interrupted ride where it was always punctuated by full stops. Like, you hit a jump, boom, hit the brakes, stop, adjust, prepare yourself, go to the next one.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's a different way of looking at it. And then when I started to play it, yeah, like there were times when, because for the most part, I'll never do more than like hit two or three checkpoints at a time without having to try and try again. When you do it, you're like, okay, that's good. But most of the time, I mean, God, I think you could try. It'll keep track of your attempts. I might try like 80 times to make a single, to navigate a single little jump on it. And it gets to the point where, you know, you become frustrated. Instead of even thinking anymore, you're just like going at it full speed and to see what happens. Maybe you could brute force it and just get your way through. And it's a really good game. Well, it's a not a good game for, but if it's the kind of game, if you're going to play it, I believe you should play it in Ventrilo when you're talking to other people, because it's like a it's something to do in the background. You know, I don't think it should command like the entirety of your attention. It's like when you're on the phone with someone and you got a pen, or if you're doing like Ryan now, you're playing with chords and stuff. But like, it's if you're doodling on your phone book and drawing,
you should play it while you're listening to GFW radio.
Yeah, I think that would work out.
Perfect. Yeah. Load it up right now. We'll give you a minute.
So this game sounds like Excitebike with hard mode.
It's not like Excitebike at all.
It is sort of in that, like, it
you
is.
Go left Excitebike to right on ramps.
Did have a really rudimentary kind of momentum thing going on. And this game is all about, like, what you're doing with your momentum and with your springs on your bike and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, I found it, you were talking about using the keys. After the first few levels, I plugged in my Xbox controller and I found it to be easier that way for me, than the keys. But
because it seems really digital, then, in that like you, a lot of times you just want to like tap.
You can, I mean, and but like the analog stick is nice enough for that. And so something about it, just I don't know, like maybe it's just because I'm still such a console gamer, but I found it to be just more intuitive than using my right hand on the arrow keys.
You know? You didn't use WASD?
No.
No,
you are
a
console gamer.
You're kicked out of the club.
The other, if not for the fact that it throws the physics angle on it, and it's supposed to, and it sometimes is fun. Like when you crash, your guy becomes like just this epileptic mess of just, you know, twitching, and the bike goes flying across the warehouse that you're in. Which I meant to say, like, so we were playing. It's not going to be funny now that I'm repeating it, but as we're, you know, the reason to play it in Ven is as we're all doing it and screaming like, fuck, or shut up. Oh, I did it. It all sounded like, fuck, yeah, fuck. I just pointed out that the whole thing's set in the same warehouse that one of the people who was in Ven with me, where his mom filmed all of her pornos.
Oh.
Because the whole thing is in a warehouse. But so if it weren't for the physics, I could almost abstract the game and say it's not, to me, like Excitebike, because it almost could be anything. It's really just this, it's really a puzzle game, and it has, to me, so much in common with, like, when you go to those novelty shops in the mall, they'll sell games and like expensive pool tables, but then they'll also have like a Gordian knot that you could buy, basically spend the rest of your month trying to untie like it's supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. Or like a pegboard, you know, a ball on a maze board or something like that, or all those puzzles where, you know, if you take it apart, you're never going to get it back together. And sometimes it approached that and where you just give up, or like, you know, like again, where you just, when you get to the point with Rubik's Cube where you're like, fuck it, and you just take it apart and put it back together again.
Off, but there is something about that's kind
what
of
try
game,
to do.
Though. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with those kinds of games. It's like that game N Plus that I talked about, you know, like where it's just these really brutal games that expect a kind of precision from you, and in order to get it, you just have to try again and again and again and perfect your technique, and there's nothing that you're ever going to fucking do with that technique but play this video game.
Right.
It's not like you're learning anything helpful, but something about the process is satisfying to me, even though it's totally pointless.
Yeah.
Now, game got to the point to where I literally did have to uninstall it.
I have a question. Like, it sounds like it's evil, but how evil is it? Does it, like, if you do succeed, does it say, good job, but you only got a silver medal because you could have done that in like six less moves or something?
Well, worse, you see your performance in the context of everyone else's.
Oh.
So you get to find out that you, after spending, you know, 40 minutes going through a single level that had you never fucked up would have taken you like 2 minutes.
Right. Because when you mentioned those,
you are ranked 7,412.
So it's pretty bad.
Because when you mentioned those like little pegboard puzzles or whatever, like, yeah, you can solve it, but then they always print on it, you can solve this in 11 moves.
Yeah,
like, you try. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
There's something good in that you can you can play other people's ghost runs as you're going. And I was trying to get us to do that. Like, Rory and I, we were all on the same thing, and it became this race of, like, who could get through these things faster. And we'd always get stuck on the exact same parts, you know, where we'd be like, I'm still there, I'm still there. And it'd be like, someone's like, I did it. And we're like, how? Fuck if I know. Fuck you, I'm on the next level. And then, like,
yeah,
you just do that.
Well, yeah, those kind of games for me do require the competitor, the friend competitors, even like Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Yeah.
The only thing that kept me going was knowing I wasn't number one on my friend leaderboard. I'm like, ah, oh, shit, he just beat me. So I got to go play it and obsess over it again until I top that score. And then I was done.
You have like an imaginary rivalry. I remember like beating Greg Ford's score, and he was my highest player on the Pac-Man.
Right. Then
I wanted to like send him a note being like, check the scoreboard, bitch. But I never did. Like,
and then you feel like you're done. And it was totally arbitrary because like it's Greg Ford. Score.
Every once in a while, I make sure I'm still at the top. But
I think you should try it then, because wouldn't you say it's an excellent game for that of mentality?
Sure. And I think it is a fun game. I think what it needs, and I think that these exist, can't you make your own levels, and can't you get user-created levels in that game?
That I'm not sure of. That makes perfect sense. I know you can...
There are way too many, like, they give you, like, 10, 12 levels that are of the difficulty... that it's like challenging and interesting and satisfying, but then it goes immediately into just nuclear Armageddon. And
this is the thing. You wonder, do the people who made it, are they such savants that it's beyond their comprehension that other people are going to get so frustrated with this? That again, when I asked you about it in email, like, hey, someone else played this, we could talk about it. You made this comment about, oh, it's like kicking yourself in the balls, but I didn't want to say anything because I
it's like
didn't
being
want to
addicted to kicking yourself in the balls, which is significantly worse.
And when you shut it off, though, there's no, like, you know, when you watch a movie or something and you kind of, or when you finish a book, you close the book and you have that sense of satisfaction. You walk out of the theater like this, you turn it off in a rage, and I'd say most of the time you contemplate uninstalling it, which is like a final violence you can do that never happens with, like, you don't finish reading a comic book and rip it in half when you're done doing it. But so this game, the temptation is always there to, like, not only close it, but to get it off, to remove all traces of its presence.
I love that about Steam, though, because you can do that.
Destroy
and it's not,
it,
you know,
yeah, it's not really gone.
You can always take it back, you know, but you can't.
It's not permanent.
Delete local content.
I saw a video on YouTube of a dude who sent these comics that he didn't like back to DC.
I think you showed me that. Like, this one sucks, like stuffing it in an envelope.
He wrote him like a letter and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's like the nerd version of the discount tire commercial where the lady like throws the tire through the window. Take your stupid comics back.
He shoves them in like their mail slot.
Yeah.
Make sure he bangs it a few times.
But I
think
I think you can make levels in that game, because I might be wrong about that. If you can't, then they definitely need to let you.
That's a feature I just never use, because no one ever seems to have the right system for finding and sorting and filtering those things out.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, they just need, if they're going to do that, they need like a really...
Well, they should just have leaderboards showing like most popular downloads.
Yeah, like, you know,
something like that. So
a place
I don't
want to
rate
them.
I don't want to make levels. I just want to play.
Just a feature I never use when there's
like, if
downloadable
good people,
levels.
Yeah, I mean, if you have some sort of quality filter, I guess this is kind of us slacking, because this is one of the things that we could do, you know? I mean, we could like put together our top five runs. And I think what some of them should definitely do is, like you're saying, make them so easy that the fun is in just a continuous run under insane conditions where you're never like, oh my God, how do I do this? Where you stop and stare at the screen and think, how do I get from here to here?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of another thing of like the tradition of the concussion maps in Team Fortress Classic. There are mods where you basically just took and made them for medics and scouts who both had concussion grenades, and find ways for them to go through the most insane platforming circumstances that people could conceive of. But I don't, when you're thinking like, okay, you throw a grenade down and you just jump up to a platform, like, they got so far beyond what anyone could imagine that's not familiar with them, that hasn't actually played the things, that it kind of reminds me of a game for that kind of person. But at $8, again, I think that it's something that, it's worth trying and seeing if that's the kind of, if it's the game for you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because Because, yeah, every minute when I came in, I was like, fuck this game, dude. I was thinking, like, this has got to be the worst shit I've ever played. But then, like, 10 minutes later, I'm like, I kind of like this, dude. And it's all based on
just
that, like, that back
yeah.
and forth of I did it, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Eli Porter again at the end of the level. The best man. I did it.
Now, I'd love that game a lot better if that's what happened when you finished the... When you finish the level, if Eli Porter,
it needs more. It does give you fireworks, but it needs more like Peggle. Like it needs Ode to Joy and like yeah, a really big fanfare.
Well,
like Peggle's it needs
like,
to like tell you you work for
like
it. And
the opposite, because it's really. I mean,
you
there are difficult. Yeah, there, there are some difficult levels, but if you fuck around long enough, you're gonna get it. And then it acts like when you do that, you've attained like fucking enlightenment or something. Like you've reached the highest level of humanity. Yeah,
that
you know?
Is brilliant game to yeah.
I but I can get down with that. Like a game that rewards you more than you deserve.
Yeah, it's like flipping a coin and then getting that for hitting tails or something.
Yeah, I want like they someone needs a Peggle mod where it throws up like Fulbright scholarships and like Nobel awards and like all kinds of stuff on the screen in addition to the fireworks, you know? So
you're granted access to heaven.
What I just want a game that tells me that I'm a really good person, that I'm smart and good looking.
People like you.
An affirmation game,
you're
you know?
Smart
like you get a headshot and then like people just start calling out of the woodworks to congratulate you and like tell you stories about how they knew that you were going to be great. And
They're games like that, right? I mean, they're
Half-Life's like that. Half-Life 2, you're going around. Every time you run into someone from the Resistance, they're like, holy crap, are you Gordon Freeman?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like totally ridiculous.
Halo tries to do that to some extent, you know, with like, that's the Master Chief. But I mean, I think they're games that more literally do it in that, like, every little thing you do, they want you to know that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of what satisfying action is about, is just, you know, it's like the God of War thing. Like, you don't have to make it, like, Ninja Gaiden precise, as long as you make it seem like by hitting these buttons, you are literally tearing someone's limbs off.
Right.
And,
yeah.
like, giving you the most satisfying possible feedback.
And it also borrowed God of War borrowed the whole, like, evolution or de-evolution of combos in games too, you know, where you used to have to work for it. And then you got to the point where like Killer Instinct was really like you'd input the equivalent of like a 7-hit combo in Street Fighter or less, and you'd somehow get 80 out of it.
Yeah.
But then now they get to the point where these games, it's like all it counts is all the combo meters is how many times you fucking press the X button since the time you turn the game on, you know.
Yeah.
But that's like another way of telling you, hey, you're doing good, man.
Yeah.
Just keep
you're
on
good at
that,
this.
Keep on hitting that
Look
button.
Look at that. You just tore that guy apart.
It gives you an achievement for it, too.
Yeah.
I did that in Ninja Gaiden, too. Like, you could, surprisingly, that of all games where, you know, Itagaki, the producer, is like, you know, this is a fighting game mentality informs this and stuff. I was able to just mash a guy with the same button and get 100, and I got an achievement and all this stuff. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, like, Devil May Cry 4, you would use your soul orbs or whatever they were called in that game to unlock, basically, you know, level 1 of the combo with XXX, then you would unlock XXXX, then you'd unlock XXXX.
Yeah.
That sounds almost as bad as Dynasty Warriors.
Well, I mean, I don't know. People that think that, like, the achievements in games should be won through, like, seriously hardcore play or a little warped. It's like, you're not really doing anything when you beat Ninja Gaiden 2 on the hardest mode besides ruining your life. I'm sorry.
True.
You are not doing anything. Yeah. Read a fucking book.
Now you gotta be careful that you don't review that game for anyone, because then all the e-tards will be
I don't
like,
review games.
See, so. Dude, he's just a pussy. Yeah. Yeah, couldn't handle it.
Yeah, whatever.
Ninja Master mode. He's
just, I got so, better.
What else are we playing?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm boring. I actually went back to GTA 4 and tried to put a dent into that. So enough GTA 4 talk for the entire lifetime.
If we don't, I mean, I know Conan's going to come up. We've got Stalker Clear Sky, which we're free to talk about.
Oh, good.
And, but Eddie.
I mean, I haven't been playing
sorry,
anything.
Kind of
I've been
just
playing Crysis.
Our options right now before we.
I can finally talk about Lego Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Tell us about Indiana Jones.
That's got to be definitely along the lines of like a game that, because all those Lego Star Wars games are all about like,
way to go!
Satisfying
you
for
absolutely nothing.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
what that is.
Those games are way cool.
Ego inflated.
So is the Indiana Jones game as cool as this?
It's like exactly the same. It's
yeah.
Just like those, except you're Indiana Jones and not Luke Skywalker.
I admire those games for allowing you to progress in them no matter how impossibly drunk you are. Like, you cannot be...
No, you can't lose
like,
those.
You know, your mind cannot be altered to the point that you would not be able to beat Lego Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Arcade games work that way, but it just was about how many quarters you had in your pocket. But you could conceivably be as drunk as you could and still stand.
That's true.
Maybe leaning on the cabinet to maintain balance.
You gotta
you could still do it.
You gotta still go to the right. But you just, your friend could sort of lean you. I guess that's true.
Yeah, that was totally a game where Star Wars this would have bugged me in any other game. Like the force powers you have where you press a button to stack up Legos in a way that lets you access a new area. Any other game, I would have been like, how come they just don't like lay the Legos out and say, try to stack up something you can climb. This one, they just like, press X, it builds into a staircase.
So what
and that was okay for me for some reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's freaking Lego Star Wars.
What about Lego Indiana Jones, Ryan? How is it like utilizing sort of the Lego brand? How is it leveraging the Lego brand? No, how is it using the, how is it using the Lego theme? Because unlike some of the other Lego games that I've looked at screens for, show you how informed I am.
That's true.
I've looked at screenshots
where the whole world
for a lot of Lego
was composed
games.
Of Legos. Like this one, I'll see, you know, like natural environments with Lego components in it and stuff.
Like it's like you're playing Legos in the grass or something.
Right.
It's so. I mean, like it's like Lego Star Wars. Like the whole world's not.
I don't
not
say
made
I,
out of Legos.
I haven't played Lego Star Wars though. So like, break it down for me. Like Robert made me break down the world of Warhammer 40,000.
Like the whole world, it's not all a Lego world. I mean, there's objects made out of Legos. Like, you know, you've got this hub area that's the university where Indiana Jones teaches. Mm-hmm. And that...
Can you teach a class?
You can't. You can go punch out some people walking around. That's pretty
cool.
I used to do that.
But, I mean, you know, like there's a library, there's bookshelves. They're normal looking bookshelves.
So people and all man-made artifacts are...
I mean, there's some Lego like plants and stuff laying around, but
it's mainly just the characters. The characters are done in the Lego style, right? I mean, that's right. There's
usually in those games.
The fact that they're made of Legos matter in this, though. I mean, in the way that you, Sean, you know, you're talking about composing things from the Legos in the
which
environment.
Which you don't
in
do,
Star
right.
Wars. Yeah,
I mean, the game does it for you.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it does some like cutesy little stuff in the cutscenes that like. You know, in the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where the big German mechanic gets his face, whatever happens to it with the propeller.
Uh-huh.
There's a cut scene like that. It shows like that happening, and then you'll see like his Lego body running around, and then his head bouncing around independent.
Right, you
it.
Can show extreme nothing violence
like,
without
he's clearly
actually
made
having
out
violence.
Of Legos. Right.
Nothing like
know?
A good decapitation joke with Legos.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, pulling off legs.
Yeah. So do they have, you know, like the boulder rolling down the temple, but the boulder's made out of Legos?
They do.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That. I've seen that screenshot.
That is the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
The boulder is made out of Legos.
Yeah.
So is it like,
it's all aesthetic.
I'm kind of disappointed. Like if it's not really using the Lego stuff on a structural or gameplay level, I mean, if it's using them, you know, for gags and for the visual element, you know, what kind of game is it? Is it just your typical... you know, action platformer type thing where you go through the environment and...
It is. A lot of the challenge lies in sort of the puzzles, you know, figuring out how do I open the door to this next area, which involves stacking up Legos, like you said. Mm-hmm. Same thing, except you're not using the Force.
How are you stacking them? Just
with your whip.
Manually.
Manually.
There was this thing about, I mean, like the Star Wars game, it wasn't so much like Legos informed what you did with it. It was that the Legos created this lightness to it. Like it was
a
light
like this
atmosphere.
Goofy, very non-serious world.
Yeah, there were no consequences. It's not. Yeah. Yeah, it was just
it's a big playground.
Yeah.
There was a lot of elasticity. Like,
dare I say, childish.
Yeah, things would turn into other things just because they could. And it's not like you had necessarily, you were more watching this happen than directly affecting how it happened. But it was still.
Why hasn't Pixar made a Lego movie?
Maybe it's all about branding.
They can't afford the license. People in Danes
well,
don't
interesting,
like Pixar.
Because NetDevil, the auto cell folks, are those the ones who have the Lego universe license? Because that sounds like what they're trying to do. They're making an MMO out of Legos, which at first you're like, what? But then if you think about it, and you know, what you're talking about with, like, what you really can do with Legos, and that's, you know, build whatever the frig you want.
Yeah.
Like, then, that could be really...
Combine it with, like...
Well, Legos. I can't say that with the Lego brand.
Okay.
The
same
what if you take an MMO and it's got, like, elements of Garry's Mod and also, you know, Little Big Planet because of it, because of the way that the Lego stuff works? Then they could get the... What are the advanced... What are Legos for, like... For honor roll students called, you get like batteries.
Oh right,
like
you got like.
Oh, what about the Lego Mindstorms?
Yeah,
I've been tempted to buy those before because you can build like robots, and then it has like its own programming language, so you can program your robots AI and all this stuff.
Well, it's weird because Legos themselves over the years,
that in the MMO,
from what I remember, Legos being as a kid, like Legos now are a lot more about like we give you a blueprint to build this very specific thing.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're a kid, it's like here's a bunch of freaking Legos. Why don't you just build what you want, kid? I never got like the box sets they have now. If you go to Toys R Us or whatever, where
too many,
like,
specialized components. But the Mindstorms thing definitely is not about. Give you some things you can build, but it's a lot more open, and people do build a lot of weird stuff with it.
Did the Legos themselves change, or people just less like ghetto than like we were? Because I know it was the same. I never got Legos in a box. Like I got like a bag of Legos, and sometimes there'd be Duplo blocks in there and a Lincoln log.
I'm sure you can still get that. I mean, the Lego store.
Like,
you make what you make.
Like there's no.
I mean, if you go to the Lego
store.
The
Millennium Falcon coming out of this bag.
There's vats of these where you're just like, I need a handful of green ones that have two connectors, so you just can buy them in bulk like jelly beans. But and like if you do go to Toys R Us, they don't have the variety kit anymore. And I'm assuming kids, I don't think kids are so creatively devoid, maybe they are, that they wouldn't construct their own things out of their multiple Indiana Jones sets that they've been given over various birthdays. I mean, you still have that ability once you have a few of them.
I definitely got stuff that was specific when I was a kid. I remember I got like a castle place set. Yeah, I got like a castle thing that was very specific, but then I would use parts of it to make like spaceships and stuff.
Yeah,
it didn't work. It was like it did make cool walls because the castle walls were these like specific pieces that fit together and had windows, and so it was made to make a castle, but you could make other stuff with it. Yeah, I always made like the most ridiculous looking things though because I just didn't have any care about the aesthetics of like the colors.
Yeah.
I was not going to bother to like try to match colors up. And so everything I made looked like total junk shop.
Light bright. So I think you made some beautiful light bright images.
Yeah. Actually, I never had a light bright.
Really?
I wanted one though.
I wonder how many houses Light Bright's burned down. Light Bright for our younger, listeners is basically like a plastic little cabinet with a light bulb in the middle.
Very hot light bulb.
And then like a grid, you put a black piece of paper over that and seal the whole thing up, and there's this grid with holes for pegs, and you put colored pegs in and it punches through the black paper and then illuminates the lighted peg.
Yeah.
But in most cases it was like, what you're saying, you just stick a bunch of shit in there and then, oh, that was fun.
I see a lot of bands
using. Can we do
those.
A dick? Yep. All right.
Like as stage
Let's
props.
Get something else.
Yeah. No, but Legos were a big part of growing up for me. I always went to the State Fair of Texas and went to the Lego competition and looked at the things that people made with Legos and wished that I could like make my own like giant thing. People would make like cities, or they'd make the Millennium Falcon or something, you know, before they had those kinds of kids.
Right, yeah.
Like giant scenes where, you know, you had people still do this today, but where it's like $1,000 with the Legos or something, you know. Every poor kid coming through there is like, I wish I could take that apart.
Lego land, and they've got entire cityscapes and stuff.
Yeah.
Like reconstructions of Paris and New York. So, yeah. Ryan, anything else? Any other thoughts on...
It's pretty fun.
Pretty fun.
Good mindless fun.
Yeah, that's how I would characterize
it. No consequence for anything.
Too. Yes.
It's good to have
that
a game
teaching
like
our
that
children,
sometimes.
Though.
Nothing they don't already know.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
So we saw, Robert, you played some, you're still playing Stalker, right?
I'm sort of held up at the moment.
They came by with, they being GSC Game World, came by with Stalker Clear Sky, which is kind of like a prequel. Well, it is a prequel. I don't know why I said kind of. I got to go, guys. I don't feel right. they came by with the prequel. And it's... first of all, it's just visually arresting. I mean, this is what they showed us. They turn it on and they're like, before they even explain anything, they just kind of like load it up, walk around this town, speed up the movement of the sun across the sky so that you see the dynamic shadows and stuff. And wind going through.
Who doesn't do like, that though?
I know. And so you're like, well, you got your way, because the first thing I'm talalking about is that, yes, it looks better than Stalker, which I thought was a pretty good looking and highly atmospheric game. But it was kind of a weird demonstration. There was some language barrier there, just asking, well, what are you showing us? What are like the consequences of this? Why are you doing this? And one thing that did sort of, I was able to, you know, make sense of immediately when they showed us is this, there's this marsh level. And of course, inspired by, I think it's the Pripyat marshes, not to be confused with Pripyat, but there's a large, you know, bunch of, you know, marshy terrain in Ukraine. And it looked like images of that from what I've seen. But the interesting thing about it is that when you're going to make an environment, Stalker, let me back up, is a first-person shooter made in Kiev, from a Kiev studio. And so it's set in the Chernobyl, in the vicinity of the Chernobyl reactor. It takes place in this, you know, alternate world where the reactor didn't just melt down, but it caused all sorts of supernatural stuff. And instead of it ever being, you know, handled in any way, shape, or form, it kind of becomes like a Russian Mad Max in the outlying area. So you're in these marshes in the party showing, and it's pretty cool because most people wouldn't think to make an FPS level in such a, like, absolutely flat environment. Usually you want elevation changes and stuff, and here you have a horizon that's almost perfectly flat. It's only broken up by whatever trees and tall grasses, you know, sedge and stuff you see. And as you're going through that, this is interesting because you don't know what's going to come out of the bushes like immediately in front of you. Some mutated boar could rush out. You might walk into they're just anomalies, right? Some sort of, you know, supernatural or extra scientific anomaly where you locate these with various, you know, meters and stuff that you have in the game now, and you upgrade them. You might have like a budget thing that just kind of like beeps as you're in the area. You might have like the equivalent of a tricked out GPS that tells you almost precisely where it's at, what its magnitude is, what the nature of the anomaly is. Or you just kind of like go around raw dog with a handful of like bolts and screws and throw them around, and when they blow up or get sucked up into a vortex, you know this is a dangerous area. So as he was going through here, I was like, this is interesting. How is this going to work? It was immediately cool because I had never seen this sort of environment in a game. But then when he climbs up into this tower, it's like, it's really like a sort of like a hedgerow maze or something, you know, like a labyrinth in a castle, where it's not until you have some ability to get up above where you're at and you look at the lay of the land and it's just massive and you're able to say, this is basically the path I need to take. And you have to mentally map what you're going to do to get out of this place. There's like a little bit of a board crossing some, maybe it's, you know, like a quicksand type area here or something, like, and then climb back down and say, now I got to translate that view I just had into my experience of going through this thick grass with this like really moody horizon and stuff. That seemed pretty cool.
So yeah. Is there any indication when you're playing that like you, the player, should really look down there? Cause I think most people would be inclined upon climbing a tower and seeing a view not to like take it at the value of like a map. They would kind of take it as like, look how cool this looks, and then leave it at that.
This is why I'm saying like piecing it out, because it wasn't like the demonstrator was telling us any of this. Mm-hmm. He was like, look, I'm walking through a marsh. You should be noticing the reflections in the water and the way that the shadows are dynamically moving as the sun's,
right,
you know,
the way the reeds bend under your feet.
Right. And it was like, but it totally made sense just looking through it. And it just communicated that to me just through the design of it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in a flat area in real life and you see one opportunity, well, were you going to climb a tree? If you see a tree, you're going to climb the tree and see what you can see, you know? I mean, and the way that it was set up, and of course it encouraged you to go up to it just by even being there. Right. If you're in a flat environment in a video game and there's one tower,
right,
what are the odds that you're not going to go up into that tower? And even if you're just generally not interested, like you've been conditioned
through that
years,
tower.
Years of playing FPS is to suspect that maybe there's some sniper rifle up there, maybe there's some ammo, maybe there's a quest item or something. Yeah. So you're going to go up there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've sort of wanted to see, like that I would like to see in an evolution of Stalker, is their level design to communicate a little bit more of what they have in mind, to get a little bit of Zelda about it, like just to have some. I mean, sometimes
you want it to go dee 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 dee.
No. I just want there to be some intuitive design, like to let you know, what you can do, what you should do, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Not like to beat you over the head with it. I mean, as it is, like
get a lot
of times
valve-y maybe
playing the original Stalker, it's almost like you really are just roaming around the Chernobyl exclusion zone, which is cool.
But you do know if you look in your PDA and stuff,
yeah,
you'll get indications of where you ought to be headed.
Yeah,
but you just never have the confidence. Maybe that's what you know you're missing, is that like in, you know, in Half-Life, if you head in a direction, you're reasonably certain that you're going the right way just by the fact that you can go there.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me. I don't want to defend Stalker too much, but it's like it's what makes it what it is for me. It's mm-hmm. like I mean, there's so many other games that are really clear about everything that.
I don't think it has to be clear. I just think that there's something to be said for like a design that isn't so incredibly vague. I mean, mm-hmm. I enjoy vagueness and mystery, but I think that if they were going to go in any direction, it would be to create levels that make a little bit more sense.
Right,
just a little bit more sense.
I think Oleg was telling us that they did get that THQ pressured them to make ultimately a more accessible game.
Oh yeah.
When they published Stalker, but that they fought like every step of the way.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that they were sort of empowered in that fight by the fact that they were working for such a low wages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When Stalker was a profitable game, even though it wasn't the best selling game.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a really bizarre and interesting game. I mean, like that you could never ever see coming out of a studio like practically anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
And when Sean, you were there, right? And he was like, it was kind of like, this is for us. Like this, we make this game for Ukrainians. Like we make this game for the guy down the street that gets computer parts from God knows where and puts them together and plays this game. Like he flat out said, he's like, that's who this game is for.
I've always been drawn to that kind of impenetrable game where like they don't really tell you what the game is. I think for the PlayStation, it was called Sentient. Does anyone remember Sentient? Probably not.
No.
It was basically like, you are in a space station. Something is happening. And then they just kind of give you free run of the space station, and there's just people wandering around doing their work, you know, just like hammering on, you know, a pipe because they're a repairman, and you can talk to them, and maybe they're just hammering on a pipe, or maybe they got something to tell you.
Yeah.
And so it was just this like, the game is figuring out the game in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I've always been drawn to that. Even though it ultimately usually ends up frustrating and not working out like I hoped. Because like once you start to see mm-hmm. like the game design that's really there, you're just like, oh, all this stuff is just filler.
To me, it's it's not so much like ease of access or use or anything, or making it like easier for non-serious gamers to get into, as much as I just find games that are able to convey something to you almost subconsciously mm-hmm. to be more compelling
compositionally
interesting. Mm-hmm. You
like
know?
It conveys that to me. Like I never got lost in there. I think that could be part of the difference. I never got lost, and I never hit a point where I was like, God, I need a strategy guide. I need to ask someone for help. Like there was never anything that even like retarded my progress through the game.
Yeah. I think never that's necessarily got lost, but I also didn't stumble onto lots of really interesting things in the vast wide open spaces, which is
right.
I know we've talked about this before as being
that's
something
totally
something that is actually kind of cool about the game, is that you're walking around and there will be this, you know, farmhouse or like a warehouse or something with it's you know, obviously they spent a lot of time working on it mm-hmm. in art, you know, it's got all kinds of stuff going on, but nothing like no firefight, nothing that you would really need to pick up for the game. That's sort of interesting in that sort of Shadow of the Colossus way, where it's like this vast empty world that gives you a mood.
Yeah.
But you
it's
know,
Chernobyl, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a fair enough, you know, argument, and it leads me back to, you know, what they showed me with Clear Sky is that so they definitely didn't indicate that they're interested in making, you know, the levels any more accessible than they think they might have already been, but for populating that world with interesting activity, that seems to be the primary, you know, thrust here. And that's to take their AI system, which they call A-Life, and the reason they think it's unique enough to deserve its own name rather than just AI is that, you know, I mean, this notion that it's all procedural, these groups go around and they might fight because they run into each other, and this AI boar is running around, and it's got some rudimentary purpose to it. They'll give it an ecological range, you know, and say it eats here or something like that. And you can now look on your map, and you'll see, you know, with flashing dots, that there are these various groups and these various, you know, alliances that are in parts of the world. And you might see that they're actually fighting. When you see, like, there's orange dots and there's green dots together, if you did go to that area, you will see the AI having a battle, you know. And maybe you happen to be affiliated with the green, you can also be affiliated with the orange. You can then join in that way. Or if you're somewhere, then they might just roll through with you. When they demonstrated it, I at first was skeptical because it looked so good, this battle that they showed me. And it was as seamless as most scripted scenarios would be, in that a group of guys come in, they encounter a rival gang, they immediately start taking covers. There's like rocks in the grass, and they immediately like drop down behind them, and they're leaning on the rocks, throwing grenades up over their shoulders, peeking around them, and then getting up. And so it's like, no way, this is scripted, right? You enter this area, you come across a tripwire, then these guys come out and go to these spots. The enemy, they perform the stage show for you. He insisted that it wasn't, that it was more like, you know, they get into a fight and they're also trained to take cover, and the environment is marked with, this is a place for suitable cover.
Yeah.
If you're AI and you're in this area and you're fighting, go here, go there. I don't know yet.
I think you
just take his word on it, but it looked really cool, and it seemed to... It has the potential to maybe fix a lot of that stuff, where if they're like, dude, this area is just empty and a player's coming here, let's bullshit it and have something happen. Let's have like a bunch of fucking wild dogs.
Or the possibility of something happening. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to happen in a scripted way. But all that unscripted stuff, I mean, the A-Life, that was all part of the original game. And part of the reason that they said that it took them so long to make was that they were so focused on these weird simulation aspects of the game that most people probably aren't even really going to, or didn't appreciate in the first one. Maybe they'll appreciate more in the second one.
But yeah.
There was a lot, I think, a lot of work on that game done in sort of creating a realistic world, which is just not what you would imagine when someone decides they want to make a semi sci-fi game about the Chernobyl exclusion zone. But it's
realistic
in
behavior and appearance, so too. That's why, like, I mean, the stuff about the graphics do matter. I mean, they were showing this DX10 feature where, you know, like if there's cold or warm air or something, you could see it displacing as it's passing over objects and stuff. And I was like, oh man, so that's DX10 only. That sucks, because that basically means that it can never be anything more than eye candy, right? It means you can't make it integral to gameplay, because you can never be certain that more than a tiny percentage of your player base is going to have the capacity to use it. But if they could, then it's like, wow, you go into an environment and you have to track these invisible things just by watching air movements and stuff, noting, kind of like just ghost hunting shit, like on the Sci-Fi Channel when they break it down with like night vision cameras.
Oh,
but yeah, I mean, there's like this enormous amount
of work.
You just
hit on their next project.
To just doing it. I think for the A-Life that they were expressing that they were disappointed with Stalker, with the way not that they're disappointed with it, but that they wanted more from it, you know?
Yeah.
And that this is their opportunity with this game to go back and like really try to deliver on the whole like multiple factions, what happens when you join this one or that one, and when they fight one another and they work in the environment and stuff. So I thought that looked pretty cool. I want to see more of it. It's coming out this summer. I mean,
surprising that it's coming out so
summer?
Quickly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, maybe it was like,
damn,
well, late summer, you know, August, September.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the first Stalker took how many years?
Right.
Several. Yeah.
And that went, it underwent different revisions and stuff. I mean, originally it was a game with vehicles as well, and what they kind of decided now was that, well, I mean, people actually modded those back in. They found the code in Stalker and like, hey, let's put the trucks and stuff back in. But the trade-off they have is like, in a game of this magnitude, the way that the world of Stalker and Clear Sky as well is organized is that if you imagine a map and you cut it up into a pizza slice or something, it doesn't actually look like the shape of a pizza, but it has those divisions. And you can go anywhere you want in one slice, but then when you cross the boundary into another slice, you load into this other area.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're all connected, and you don't, like, if you want to go, you don't have to go clockwise around the pizza to get to other slices. You can cross over in any direction you want to get to these. So the world is like that, but you have these loading things. And what that means is that they do that, for one, because they want that high degree of fidelity in each environment. If you're going to render the whole world like Oblivion style or something, you have to have some trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
When you introduce a vehicle, it means traveling really quickly across these.
And it means hitting
those load points, like in Half-Life 2, you know, where it's like you see a tunnel coming, that's your cue that you know,
to
get
go
ready
get some
to,
coffee.
Go get it. Yeah, get some drink. You know.
Yeah.
So they avoid that.
I mean, you probably wouldn't have been shown this, but. I was wondering, like, how well those pizza slices match up, because one of the things in Stalker
like
is that
a messy amoeba.
Yeah, like one of the things in Stalker is that
or a map. Think of a map of countries.
Yeah, yeah, but like while those countries like butt up against each other and you can go between them, it's funny like how you will cross that line of loading and look back and it sort of like doesn't really match. In the game, do you know what I mean?
The environment doesn't.
Yeah, like they don't match up in perfect seams. Like you'll be crossing like close to a gate, and then it'll cut into a load screen, and then you look back on the other side and you don't see the gate. You're like on some hill somewhere, huh. So there's some like
it's like a rudimentary
some places they actually do reuse the assets, so they are one to one.
There
are others where you
yeah.
don't. Like toward the stadium, have you been there? The stadium's a definite jump.
No, I don't think I've been there. I'm just outside Pripyat. Yeah.
I think that's another one, too, when you get into the city.
Yeah. I mean, it's no big deal, but...
Right. I mean, a lot of games will put up just enough of what it used to be there to make it look kind of right. It's like,
funny.
There was that tree there and maybe that cave entrance, but it didn't quite look like that.
Yeah. I feel like Stalker is one of those games that were, like, you like it so much that, like, all the little sort of almost... lo-fi, like low budget, even if it's not low budget, but like sort of homemade feeling aspects of the game only enhance your love of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you go to the inventory screen and it like jumps at you from like 1996.
Yeah,
and there's like this really lame looking dude there who's supposed to be you, and all the little graphics of the things are pretty like
yeah.
But like, I don't know.
It's one of those games that like it's the. The more I sit on it, the more I kind of like it and appreciate it for what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and the less relevant all that little stuff comes back. So it's like, if I was talking to someone who was just playing it and they're like, yeah, but the fucking inventory's mess or like this and this, and you'd be like, you get to the point where you're like, where it's closer to criticism. You're like, well, that doesn't matter. Like, this is like, if I was to write a review about it, I was like, I'm not going to talk about that shit.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So we have only got 20 minutes left. Let's move on to, because we've got a few other games.
But, you know, this is a good segue because you were talking about earlier listening to foreign music.
Oh.
That is. Yeah, I mean.
Okay, let's hit this up real quick and then go to Conan.
Because I feel that way about this game, that there's something about its foreignness that it makes you appreciate it.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, because I kind of been wanting to bring this up for a while because now it's been like a month when I started listening to, like, some French rap, some French hip-hop. And it's... Like, to the point where, like, it's instead of just dicking around with it for, like, a couple listens in a week, it's like, that's pretty much all I've been listening to for a month. It's like, and the thing about it is that, like this game, yeah, sometimes things from other places can help inform you about how you read, you know, the things that you, in your own language that come from your own culture and stuff. So for me, like, listening to it, and I want to recommend, I'm going to play a quick snippet of it, but Kenny Arcana is... like an Argentinian who then, you know, emigrated to France. And I think her stuff's fantastic. It's just listening to it. You can even, here's another important thing. I had, you know, in high school and college, I took some French courses, not enough to ever become fluent, but enough so that like maybe every 3 out of 10 words or something, I understand. And I find that
anytime it's a food item,
right, anytime it's a food, all I hear is just like just crepes and fucking cafe, but hearing enough of that is like where it's not entirely strange to me, and also because it's heavily influenced by, you know, American hip hop. But as I'm listening to it and stuff, I'm like, oh, like this just sounds fantastic. I mean, like the flow, yeah, you got the flows, man, tripping about the flows. But sorry, that's up from the Bub Rub video. YouTube it, Bub Rub, BUBBRUBB. And the delivery and all the stuff just sounds incredible. Then I started looking up the translations for the lyrics and you know, translating myself, and then, you know, filling in the blanks where I could. And I was like, okay, wow, this is neat, because not only is it like, this is music that sounds great, but if it were, say, American, English, you know, language music, I would be prohibited from maybe liking as much as I do because the lyrics would be embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it wasn't just that. I was like, wow, is this just a cool coincidence that these are good lyrics, you know, insofar as an English-speaking person who's, like, deciphering French lyrics right. to sing. But there, it wasn't stuff that was immediately embarrassing. It wasn't like the equivalent of like rhyming ladies with Mercedes and party with Bacardi and that kind of shit, you know? and so she's really into, you know, like this anti-globalization movement stuff. And so I started listening. So I branched out from there. I rocked out so
wait,
so
wait, 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 wait. The French hip hop, the French rapper is anti-globalization?
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Because most of the French hip hop scene is from people who, if their parents weren't, you know, born outside the country, or, you know, they were immediately from outside the country, so from French speaking and sometimes non French speaking, like Eritrea and Somalia and stuff, from the North African countries, some from South America. And so there's a lot of this kind of like post colonial theme that goes, and the French love that as well, you know. I mean,
yeah.
The big, you know, sort of postmodern,
but it's a little ironic. I mean, being like post-colonial with with like colonial culture,
with the colonial culture. Yeah. It's kind of. I mean, it's not just a simple colonialism is bad. I mean, it's not. Yeah. I mean, well, not that, but globalization.
Yeah.
So of course they have to deal with that, and there's some that like, yeah, they would want to say like, yeah, we are. This is rap in French as opposed to French rap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some artists that actually want to distinguish that. And I mean, but I think the other thing about listening to it is like, so I picked up some other artists. I was like, wow, I like these too. And then I was interested to find out that I would start finding tracks with some of the same artists that I was picking up together. And it reminded me of how, like, you know, in English language music, like I'm really into, you know, Sage Francis. And I was also for a while into Jolie Holland, who's sort of like a folk singer. And the two have nothing in common. And then all of a sudden, like on the next like Sage album, a track turns up with her singing on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Like how? She's like how is it that
pin.
Like yeah, so the demographics pin. And I'm like, it's like, is this even possible when I don't even understand the lyrics and I'm from another culture and I'm still getting these kinds of overlaps and stuff, you know? But it makes me think about like, to what extent is it the delivery of the music? To what extent is it the lyrics? All these other things. It's like kind of a nice mirror to hold up and make you think about, you know, what it is you like about music in the first place, you know, and it challenges some of your like if people ask me, well, what is it that you like about that determines the rappers that you like, you might say, well, you know, it has to be the most insightful and thoughtful lyrics or just really clever stuff, wordplay and all the shit. But then that kind of gets thrown out the window,
right?
And you're like,
it's French.
You're finding out about the wordplay after the fact, you know?
Yeah. I honestly think that, the difference between music you don't like and music that you do like is that music that you do like lets you put your defenses down, mm-hmm. and lets you let the music do its thing. You can, almost anyone can like almost any kind of music.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. you just resist it because it is this emotional kind of thing. And it is, for people of a certain age, like a identity defining thing that you're critical to like a crazy point, especially in like the era of like MP3 downloads and massive, mm-hmm. you know, gigs of music out there, or you know, that you could listen to. That once you find something, you're like, I like this, and you let those defenses down, you embrace it fully, and it doesn't matter. Like, you accept all of its flaws, even if you find out after the fact that the lyrics are retarded or whatever.
You're
just into it. I mean, I find that with music all the time. Like, it's all about like getting to the point to where you're willing to just like, mm-hmm. let your critical mind turn off. And
yeah, because you're first you're kind of scanning things for how they'll contribute to your identity package, you know, what are they going to say, what are they going to signify about you, in the same way that like your bookshelf does and all these other things. And you get to the point where you're like just listening to it for the sake of listening to it. The other thing though was that like, because I have absolutely, most cases with music, I've always got someone who's on the same page, you know, like your close friends, you usually listen to the same stuff, you know, it's like, and like Rory and I always listen to the same stuff, but then it's like with this, you hit the one where you're like, there's no way anyone's going to listen to this but me. And then you're like, it's kind of weird. It's like Terra Incognita for music, you know, like this, you're on your own with this, man. Like if people are coming over to your car, you're not playing it. Mm-hmm, you're going to talk about music. You're not talking about it with anyone, which is kind of like, I've been waiting to talk about it on the podcast, you know?
That's how it is for me with like most music though. Like people don't really, I mean, I listen to just a lot of cheesy shit. Like I really love the band Bread from the 70s. They're like an easy listening, like folk rock band. I mean, I literally think they're like geniuses. And I just like a lot of like stuff that people think is just super cheesy. And it's been like my time, like, you know, getting yelled at by my wife to like listen to some normal music because she likes, you know, like aggressive rock and roll music, and I just keep like mellowing out over the years.
Yeah.
Max Chill style.
That's so, where the name came from.
Yeah.
Your love of Bread.
Yes.
So with that, I go to our last 10 minutes on Conan. Golden. Sorry for these rapid jumps. I'm like looking at the clock.
Yeah, we're clock watching today.
Let's get us like the WarioWare episode.
Yeah. Ryan, you started playing. Sean, have you started yet?
Nope. I think that the window has passed for me too.
Why is that game? Because I keep reading about it. Why is that? Like, it seems to be like a really popular MMO. Like out of nowhere, it seems. Because I always when a new MMO comes out, it always seems to just like fall down. And
right. This is the exception to the rule. For
why?
I don't know.
Like, kind of like when we first saw it. Like when we last saw it at E3. Remember, I was like, it was the last thing I would have imagined myself playing.
To me, it seems it's drawing a lot of PvP people.
Yeah.
It could be in any number of factors. It could be just burnout on current MMO and then happen to come along at the right time. Or like maybe they weren't ready to jump to the next game when then Tabula Rasa came out months ago. You know, it could be a million things. Yeah. I honestly didn't expect it to.
But you don't find anything in the game that
I didn't play it very far. And everyone I've talked to finds something in the game that I'm just not interested in. So I'm like, well, you're talking about how the PvP is what's drawing you in. And to me, I'm just like, well, I don't really care. So why would I play this?
Yeah.
But what I had played.
And your group, though. That's also the other
and
thing.
And my
that's
group.
That's probably the biggest factor for me.
Well, it is social.
Because
it very
it's
is
like
much so-
if
social.
Duncan and Rory and Matt and James and Anthony weren't playing, I would not be on here telling you that the PvP makes it. I wouldn't even be playing.
Right.
So it's like if you have, if some catalyst sets in motion and people in your group start playing, you'll end up playing it.
Right, yeah. I mean, the way it works now is the people I play games with are playing Warcraft still. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And anytime, I've always been interested in like almost every one of those games that came out, Tabula Rasa. But like, you need at least one other person to just jump over there with you that you want
to
play with.
They have to hit like a critical mass too.
I think
this game hit for a lot of people hit that critical mass like really early on, and that's what's
Yeah. So I wonder if marketers ever try to, because nowadays like it's all about getting like community influentials, whether be it in like clothing or music, to advocate for a product to their friends and the people that they're in a community with. I wonder if there's been any like Age of Conan like
that's a really good thing, but I mean a good idea because you have like. I'm trying to think of Malcolm Gladwell's terminology for it. I mean, which I found to be like really effective, like explanatory power.
But it's basically really just like,
early adopters is, another way to look at it. But like the people who are, setting, trendsetters and early adopters and stuff. But if you can isolate those, the alpha versions of those in MMOs and convince them or just pay them.
Yeah,
to play and advocate the game. I
and
wonder
bring
if,
their
like,
friends with.
Yeah,
them,
they can.
You know?
They can set in motion like an avalanche.
Yeah,
if you get enough of them, that will build and gradually
just, like,
start rolling. And
totally propose a conspiracy theory here. Like, we don't just have to grab eyeballs. We have to like grab like these pockets of people. Like we have to. They all have to want to migrate. It's it's like trying to get you to move out of your city or
hook?
Something. Yeah.
What I'm feeling now at level 32 in the game is, which may not seem like a lot, but it's taken quite a bit of time to get there.
32 is pretty
is that there's
hefty,
like
actually.
I'm just kind of like disappointed in the disconnect between the metagame that's what's worth playing in any MMO and then the actual game. The actual game being we have an infestation of infected wolves on the perimeter of our town. Go out and get me the pelts and intestines of 24 of them. And the metagame would be when, say, for example, we find this player and we start beating the shit out of him and we go to a spawn and keep beating the shit out of him. And then he starts screaming how, oh, you guys are in for it now. I got a whole, like, I got a world of level 80s that are coming that are going to steamroll you. Oh, you think you were going to do some quests tonight? Good luck with that. And then just like basically just keep. It's kind of like when you're in a forest and you hear a twig snap and you get scared and you just say, like, Robert, you got the shotgun? Good, I got the 45. It's like this guy's doing this in the MMO world, like talking about his like imaginary level ladies that are going to come and get him. And then eventually he did get some friends and they weren't the ones that he was threatening us with. And then you just tell them like, we're going to just beat the shit out of all of you again and again unless you kick this guy out of your guild and leave him here. And if you leave him here to our mercy, then you may pass. And, like, that's the metagame, and that's the fun part. And now imagine if instead, if the game...
Right, but is that in the design document?
Right, but what if the game wants to encourage this kind of thing with, like, we just got our guild town. We have our own, we have our... are real estate and buildings, and this, we're going to have to start defending it, and it can be destroyed, and this is a way that it starts to integrate this into the game proper later on. But what if, like, even at the point where I'm at, it was able to say, you go talk, say you go talk to the feudal lord of the town, and his part of his, the usual thing, his text, instead of that the town's overrun by rats, is that, like, hey, I'm an unpopular guy here. These guys are thinking about rebelling against me. It's time for a little, like, old bait and switch. You know, let's say that it's these band of brigands that have been fucking it up for this whole town. I need you to go kill them. But then what it does is it randomly finds, like, a group, a guild that's online in your area that's at a comparable level and says, you need to kill. Your mission is now kill 5 people in this guild. And then if you do that, and then you go back, then you get your reward and stuff. And then they're trying to run from you. Whatever they're doing, it's like, we now have to worry about, instead of just arbitrary ganking for this metagame and whatever, like, shits and giggles these people are trying to have, like, that's, they're determined to do it because it's part of the official world, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it, I mean, you could do stuff like that. I'm
to
sure
some degree,
some
Sins of a Solar Empire experimented with that, with the bounty system. Like, that was a way that the game kind of said, you should attack these other people because of this unrelated game mechanic. Well, I mean, it's related to the players, but the game itself is kind of establishing
it,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It's integrating it. Yeah, exactly. So it's like you put a bounty on it, a mercenary thing, and oh, I'm looking out the door.
Not yet.
Warning.
Almost, though.
So I'd like to see that. Ryan, you've got a different take on it. Low-level play and not playing with, you know.
Well, I have a level 5 character, so take this with a grain of salt.
Many grains.
I have not played very much of this game. But my sort of knee-jerk reaction to Conan so far, and I'm going to keep playing more just to see how it turns out, because you've been telling me about all the hijinks you guys have gotten into.
You got to
join
this
should
Team
appeal
Orange.
To you, because you always complain that, like, games just they don't make them like Ultima Online anymore. And this sounds like...
Well, this still doesn't sound like Ultima
Online.
Did you
see the video? The video of the guy with the horse approaches Ultima Online. He basically gets his horse. He goes to these canyon walls where you're taking these mountain trails that are only like enough, wide enough for 2 people walking. And he backs the horse up and he just waits there. And he's level 80, so that if there's level 30s coming by, they're like, let's just run by. But then he kicks them with the horse as they go by and knocks them off the mountain where they fall to their deaths. And the video has him doing it over and over again. Of course, it's playing Yakety Sax, but it's like, imagine you're the gatekeeper, and it's like, you kill this fucking guy and the horse, or you get your ass kicked off the mountain every time you want to go, or a rope bridge or something. That's not Ultima, but
that's pretty good.
That's the spirit of Ultima, and it does live in the game to some extent.
Oh, God.
Well, so my thing, like, my knee-jerk reaction to this game, you know, I'm still in the newbie area, I guess you're in the newbie area, pretty much to level 20.
Mm-hmm.
19,
it,
right?
It's mechanically, it's just like, wow. I mean, it's like, I look at this and I'm like, I've done this before. Why do I want to get invested in this thing? Like, it's fundamentally like the same game that World of Warcraft is and Lord of the Rings Online. And like, it doesn't seem... In this brief window of time that I've played, it seems like these mechanics are all sort of exactly the same.
Yeah, I would agree. For the rather than compare it to World of Warcraft, which I haven't played, but I played some Lord of the Rings and Auto Assault and Guild Wars, and yeah, on that level that I always talk about, those games are all the same thing.
Like,
they have different embellishments on them, but structurally they're all identical.
And you know, I've been. Again, obviously not firsthand, but I've been seeing some people complain that the end game isn't quite so varied once you hit level 80.
This is
people are already hitting
50.
80 though.
Well, yeah, when you're
50 on 50 to 60 is supposed to be a big content gap,
right?
And then perhaps it's 70 to 80, with 60 to 70 being fine. But yeah, that's.
But I mean, once you hit that level cap. Like, I look at WoW. WoW is the one exception where, you know, like, Blizzard has this philosophy where it's like, you know, we need to hurry up and get people to this level cap so they can experience the, the real game that kind of starts at that point. And most MMOs, and this is my problem with, I'm just using Age of Conan as sort of a jumping off point, but my problem with most MMOs is, like, you know, you're not working toward anything. Once you hit that level cap, there's really, it's like, oh, like Lord of the Rings Online, it's like, here's these 2 dungeons that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's really it. And you know, for an MMO to really pull me away from World of Warcraft at this point, it needs to be at least as sophisticated as World of Warcraft out the gate. Like, I need to know that I'm working.
Right. I haven't heard anything about Conan's, like, end game, quote unquote, this kind of stuff I'm doing now and WoW that really interests me. I haven't heard anything about it. It's the raiding and all
when you do a raid, and you no longer can get up to a higher level,
there's a different progression. What's your motivation? It's like a gear progression at that point. I mean, you're still attaining stuff to get to the next stuff, but it's kind of a more protracted and way more social, actually.
Yeah.
At least in WoW's structure.
Yeah, I think that's like what Ryan's saying. It's like Ryan wants it out the gate and here.
I mean, I want to know that I'm working towards something.
That they're going to do it. Right now, some of that is in the PvP, and it's in, like I was saying about, like, destroying other people's towns, raising their villages and stuff.
I look at that, and I say, like, do you know, have you ever heard anything about Shadowbane?
I've heard about it, but I haven't played it.
Age of Conan, to me, all the like town raising and all that stuff, it seems to me like it's trying to be, in a way, what Shadowbane was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very similar. Players can build towns and have these guild alliances and attack other people's towns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've played that game for a good 4 or 5 months, and that sort of stuff was like all there was. And, you know, I'm crazy about PvP. I love PvP, but I don't want that can't be the only thing.
Right.
Right, yeah.
So, like, who's to say that they won't add the equivalent of raids and stuff?
Oh, they certainly could.
And I'm sure they will, but it's like, if you want that now, even though you're level 5. The other thing that differentiates us, you guys are probably the ideal consumer if they can get you, because you'll continue to play. I don't look at it. I'm not going to play. I can tell you now, because I don't want to play any MMO. Like, I don't, like, month after month, the way I play Company Heroes. You know, like, I've already got my money's worth out of it for, you know, the $50 game, and, like, I'll play it for the 30 days I have and get as high as I can. And, like, after then, it's like, I don't need – this is not my new home. It's not like I'm choosing the town where I'm going to buy a house and where I'm going to educate my kids and stuff. And, I mean, I don't say that to insult you for wanting that out of the game, even though it's idiotic and I can't believe you do it.
even though it's insulting us.
I'm just joking. Okay, we're getting kicked out of here.
Yeah, we're getting the sign.
So, we will be back next week. Jeff is not going to be here, is he?
Don't forget Friday. Listen to the Friday bonus podcast.
Tomorrow we have a Dawn of War special coming on, and Jeff is going to be out in Europe, in France. I'll have to ask him to score me some vinyl.
That's not for a couple weeks, though.
Yeah. Oh, he's okay. So at some point
in the future,
we all have more Age of Conan to talk about next week.
Okay.
And a lot of review stuff. I wanted to recommend people check out MTV Multiplayer. They had a week dedicated to looking at issues surrounding game reviews. It was pretty interesting, and there's a lot of clicks that lead off of that site onto others, such as Variety and elsewhere, and we'll talk about some of that next week. And we out. Petite Marseillaise, débarque, dealer, c'est l'heure, dealer. Ta petite Marseillaise, débarque, des balles, sérimes, écorchées, dealer. Qu'une fois dans, je retirerai plus des bas, dealer. Je me fous de la tendance et de ce que les gens disent. Que je compte brûler leurs normes qui voient le rap comme une marchandise, dealer. Pour foncer, j'attends pas leur signal, je veux pas signer. Y'a pas de pseudo gangsta chez moi, j'ai pas de potes chez les résignés, dealer. Je fermerai pas ma gueule, même dans la